Hey, preliminarily, Mr. Coons, can you help me with the pronunciation of your client's last name, please?
Yes, Your Honor, it's Houston.
Houston. Okay, thank you, sir. Good morning. This is the time and place set for oral argument in State versus Houston, docket number 48367. We are conducting this hearing via Zoom. Present on behalf of the state is Andrew Wake. On behalf of Mr. Houston is Mark Koontz. The court would also like to recognize and thank Judge John Melanson for participating with us pro tem. Judge Melanson will participate fully in this decision. Mr. Wake, are you ready to present your opening argument?
I am, Your Honor, thank you. May it please the court, counsel, the state is appealing from the district court's order on intermediate appeal, reversing the magistrate court's denial of Mr. Houston's motion to suppress. The state contends that the district court erred in two ways. First, the district court erred by rejecting the magistrate's conclusion that Mr. Houston was not seized before the officer had reasonable suspicion to investigate driving under the influence. So the facts here are not in dispute and they're relatively straightforward. Mr. Houston was parked on the side of the road in the middle of the night in an isolated rural area, standing outside of his truck when Officer McIntosh stopped his patrol car about 50 feet behind Mr. Houston, turned on his overhead lights, stepped out, and immediately told Mr. Houston that the lights were on only for safety and that Mr. Houston was free to go at any time. Mr. Houston contends that he was thereby unlawfully detained. The state's position here is relatively straightforward, as was the magistrate court's, I think. The only indication of a detention here was the use of overhead lights. So there was no threatening presence of multiple officers. There was no display of weapons. There was no physical touching of Mr. Houston. Officer McIntosh did not block Mr. Houston's vehicle. And in fact, he testified that he specifically and intentionally parked a significant distance behind Mr. Houston so that Mr. Houston could leave either by pulling forward or by pulling backwards. And Officer McIntosh did not use any tone of voice indicating a detention. As the Idaho Supreme Court has made clear in State v. Willoughby, the use of overhead lights behind an already parked vehicle is not alone sufficient to effect a detention. But more importantly, Mr. Houston was immediately told that the lights were on only for safety and that he was free to go. Any reasonable person under those circumstances would understand that when he's told that the lights are on only for safety purposes and that he's free to go, that he's free to go. And so Mr. Houston was not detained by use of the lights and by Officer McIntosh's mere approach of him for a consensual encounter. The district court's conclusion to the contrary seems to be based primarily on two thoughts. First, that Officer McIntosh's motivation for engaging with Mr. Houston, and in particular, whether it was for a community caretaking purpose was somehow determinative of whether a seizure occurred in the first place. And second, that there was inadequate evidence that Mr. Houston heard and understood Officer McIntosh when Officer McIntosh told Mr. Houston that he was free to leave at any time. So as to the first issue, the first question, while community caretaking was at issue with respect to the motion to suppress, because the state made an alternative argument regarding the justification for any brief detention that might have occurred, whether Officer McIntosh was engaging with Mr. Houston for community caretaking purposes has no relevance to whether he was seized in the first place. That's a question about whether a reasonable person in Mr. Houston's position would have felt free to leave, not a question about why Officer McIntosh initiated the encounter in the first place. And so the district court just erred by considering the community caretaking purpose in the detention analysis. With respect to whether Mr. Houston heard Officer McIntosh when Officer McIntosh told him that he was free to leave at any time, Officer McIntosh spoke clearly and in a normal tone of voice, and there's absolutely no evidence that Mr. Houston didn't hear him. Even if there had been such evidence, we're left only with the overhead lights, which again would not be sufficient to constitute a detention under State v. Willoughby. And at any rate, the Fourth Amendment inquiry is objective, and there's no requirement that officers confirm for everything they say that they've been heard by the person to whom they're speaking.
Mr. Wade.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the magistrate court make any findings regarding whether Mr. Houston did or did not or could not hear the officer?
I don't believe that the magistrate court did make any findings specifically on whether he was heard by whether Officer McIntosh was heard by Mr. Houston. No, Your Honor.
And was that an issue that was the magistrate was asked to weigh in on?
No, Your Honor. The argument regarding whether he was heard by Mr. Houston was never raised before the magistrate court. It was raised for the first time on appeal to this court.
Thank you.
Turning to the second alternative argument that the state made below, whether any brief detention, assuming for sake of argument that one occurred, would have been justified by a community caretaking function. The state contends that the district court on intermediate appeal erred by concluding that it would not have been. So the question with respect to community caretaking is whether the nature and scope of the detention was reasonable in light of the surrounding circumstances and the concerns that motivated it. Officer McIntosh watched a vehicle in the middle of the night disappear behind a hill and fail to reappear on the other side, where there were no roads or driveways on which the vehicle might have turned. The magistrate court found that Officer McIntosh was investigating, quote, whether or not the driver was safe. And in particular, Officer McIntosh testified that he thought something might have, quote, happened to the driver, wanted to check on them, and wanted to see if they were okay. It was perfectly appropriate for Officer McIntosh to investigate what happened to Mr. Houston's vehicle, and it was reasonable for him to initiate his overhead lights while doing so. He was alone. It was the middle of the night. He was parked near a road. He was interacting with someone he did not know and who did not know him, and who may well not have been able to tell that he was law enforcement, that the vehicle parked behind him was a law enforcement vehicle had the lights not been activated. So assuming there was a detention before Officer McIntosh reasonably suspected Mr. Houston was inebriated, it was exceptionally non-intrusive. The facts of this case are extremely similar to State v. Morales, a case in which this court found that there was a lawful community caretaking detention under very similar circumstances, and the same analysis should apply here. So unless the court has additional questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Wake. Mr. Koontz, argument on behalf of Mr. Houston.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court and counsel. Today, Mr. Houston's asking this court to affirm the reversal done by the intermediate appeal that the magistrate denied initially the motion to suppress based on the fact that there was no detention of Mr. Houston during the course of the stop. I believe the magistrate's finding, Your Honor, specifically were about a consensual encounter, and that's what the initial justification for the detention was, at least in the magistrate's opinion, finding as a fact and conclusions of law. However, when we got to the intermediate appeal, that's when the intermediate court reversed that, saying that there in fact was a detention here. And I think what's important, at least to the argument to look at, is the test was the overall totality of the circumstances mentioned in the intermediate appeal court. We had, you know, late night, we had a pretty young kid. I don't think Dace wasn't 21 yet when this happened. We had a uniformed officer approaching him and the lights coming on. And there was a period of time before Detective McIntosh did tell Dace that he was free to go and his lights were on for safety. I think there's some distinguishing factors as far as the case of State v. Morales. In the pullout area here, Dace's truck was completely out of the roadway. There was no portion of the vehicle that was impeding the line of traffic. This is a pretty rural road, not a lot of traffic at this, you know, during the daytime, but especially at night. And then Officer Detective McIntosh did not observe any driving pattern. There was no sudden veering off the road. He just thought it odd that the vehicle didn't pass his location as he thought it ought to that night. when he was observing lights on the road. I think from the testimony of Detective McIntosh, I think he was also that evening, while there might have been part of his motivation was checking on the well-being of Dace or the driver that he saw. I think some of it too, he was investigating the possible commission of a crime. And I think his testimony reflects that this was something that he did out of curiosity, looking for DUI drivers. And I think his testimony reflects that. So even with the statement that my client was free to go, I believe the totality of the circumstances does justify the fact that there was a detention, not a long detention. And, you know, once Dace is told to leave and that his lights are on for safety, I think that minimizes the intrusion. But prior to that, Dace had no idea why the lights came on, and Detective McIntosh approached him.
Mr. Koontz, can I interrupt for a second with a question?
Oh, yes, Your Honor.
Are you aware of the case? It's a May 2021 case from the Idaho Supreme Court, Alvarenga Lopez. It's very similar factually in that an officer pulls up behind a car that's already parked on the street at night, and the Supreme Court in a split decision concludes that it was consensual contact. And there were no overhead lights in that case. So, this is the kind of case I hated to be, or the kind of question I hated to be asked when I was counsel, because it's a little bit of an ambush and neither party addressed it in their brief. But I'm wondering if in preparation for your argument today, you came across that case.
Well, I did not, Your Honor. And
okay.
And I think, you know, going back to, you know, the fact, I think when we look at the test for what constitutes a seizure here, I think, you know, the totality of the circumstances is what the main thing is, as far as what we look at, whether or not a detention occurred. And while, you know, the lights may not have played a significant factor in that case with a car that's already pulled over, there certainly in this case was at least being approached by an officer kind of out of the blue. I would say that the totality of these facts would constitute a seizure of Dace given the circumstances. And like I said, I apologize. I did not catch that in.
Yeah, no need to apologize. But just so what is your position on the state's statement that it's really the overhead lights in this case that are the key? I'm sorry, the district court, that the overhead lights are the factor that is most important for the court to consider in this case.
I think the district court's pointing out to not only was there, you know, and I think focusing solely on the lights, I don't think that's probably, you know, the best way to apply the test in this case. But the district court also mentioned, you know, that there was an officer in uniform. It was late at night. You know, there was nobody else around. So I think while the lights are a factor, I think it's one of many other factors that the court needs to consider instead of, and I agree, the lights in and of themselves don't constitute necessarily a seizure by law enforcement. However, I think they go into the test looking at the totality of the circumstances of whether or not, you know, objectively, if a person is standing next to a vehicle and sees law enforcement approach with the lights flashing, I think even in that moment, we could say that, you know, that he at least objectively thought he was seized until the officer told him that these are on for safety purposes and that he was free to go. So yeah, I think it's, you know, it's important consideration, but I think it's one of many. With the intermediate appeal, there was, like I mentioned earlier, that, you know, there was a uniformed officer with a sidearm approaching somebody at night. So I think the lights go in to that entire consideration of whether or not there was a seizure. And I think if the, you know, the state's argument that even if there was a seizure, it was minimal and justified by the community caretaking function, I believe in this instance that there was no indication of any distress by Dace while he was driving. There was no indication that any wreck had occurred when Detective McIntosh approached. He was simply pulled over in a rather large pullout, well free of the flow of traffic. And so I think the community caretaking function in this instance doesn't justify the detention, however brief it was initially when approached by Detective McIntosh. There doesn't seem to be any other motivation other than, like I said earlier, the Detective McIntosh was, you know, on patrol that night. It was late. There was a vehicle on the road, and I think he was wanting to see if there was any illegal activity going on. I believe his testimony during the original suppression hearing would support that. And so I guess I would ask if there's any other questions. Otherwise, we just simply ask that this court affirm the reversal of the district court's, or I'm sorry, affirm the district court's reversing the magistrate's denial of this motion. And like Mr. Wake said, counsel, the facts in this case are pretty much undisputed, and we are fortunate to have a video that is, I believe, part of the record that is exactly what happened that evening. I mean, we can see exactly what happens. It's just given the legal interpretation of what those facts are. And in this case, I think looking at the totality of the circumstances, that Dace was seized while momentarily, and that seizure, while brief, obviously you can't say that it was a significant seizure, cannot be justified by the community caretaking function. One of the justifications for police detention. I don't think there was any other facts that would support why Detective McIntosh did that or approached him that evening in, I don't want to say the middle of nowhere, but it's pretty remote part of Gem County. So thank
you. Mr. Coons?
Yes.
Part of your response to Judge Brailsford's question was that Mr. Houston was detained at least until the officer told him that he was not, and that he only had his lights on for safety. Is your only argument why that didn't eliminate any detention based on the assertion that Mr. Houston may not have heard that?
To be honest, Your Honor, that was something that was the district court relied on in reversing the magistrate's decision. We didn't argue that in front of Judge Smith or even on intermediate appeal to the district court. So I can't claim credit for that as far as a justification. I mean, it would make sense if he didn't hear that he was free to go, but I don't think, you know, the video or anything, I mean, the video just kind of speaks for itself. I don't know if there's any way to tell if Mr. Houston was able to hear that or not from the instructions from Detective McIntosh. All we know is pretty quickly after he gave the instruction that he was free to leave and the lights are on for safety, he did, immediately ask for a driver's license from Dace. So, and Dace complied with that request, provided his driving credentials to Detective McIntosh.
Do you agree or disagree with, I understand the state's position that the driver's license was requested only after the officers noticed signs of driving under the influence?
I believe the testimony was pretty clear from Detective McIntosh that as he approached, he noticed the signs of impairment, glassy eyes, smelled the odor of an alcoholic beverage, and then requested his driving license. So, and again, since we have a video of it, we can really tell that this happened all very quickly. And our position is pretty limited to the fact that the detention, the only time that it could have occurred was between the time he was approached by Detective McIntosh and the time he told him he could leave. But I think practically from that testimony, we conceded that on our intermediate appeal and even to Judge Smith at the magistrate level that once he got close enough that he could observe Chase's or Dace's eyes and, you know, smell the odor of an alcoholic beverage, I think at that point, a separate justification for the detention would pop up. And that would be, you know, investigation of a DUI to see if he was legally or if he was impaired, if he could operate a motor vehicle. And at the time, you know, Dace was, I believe he was 16 years old. So it was, would have been a pretty low threshold for that. So I think that as far as justification, that was a separate and independent justification for continued detention at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Sorry, one more question, Mr. Kuntz.
No problem.
I don't believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the magistrate court made any particular findings about the nature of the officer's patrol car, namely whether it was marked or unmarked. The district court refers to the car in its decision as a marked vehicle, which I presume means it's like got the logo of the Gem County Sheriff. But the officer testified, according to the transcript, that his unit was an unmarked unit. So does that, what impact, if any, does the, whether the unit or the patrol car is marked or unmarked have on your analysis? Does that make a difference in your analysis?
Your Honor, I think with that case, and I will say, you know, I know Detective McIntosh pretty well, and it is an unmarked vehicle. However, it does have all of, you know, the lights in the vehicle. So when it, you know, he turns all the lights on, it definitely flashes. But as far as a paint job or a big logo that says Sheriff's Department, his vehicle doesn't have that. It's just kind of an SUV. I think in this instance, it really doesn't make a difference because of the fact it was at night. I don't think, you know, I think the biggest thing that would at least appear objectively to somebody in my client's position is, you know, that it's flashing blue and red lights all over the place. I think if it was during the daytime, having a marked or unmarked vehicle might be a bigger factor as far as what kind of show of authority is being brought out or not out. I don't think that's the right word, but what show of authority is pulling up behind me? Is it a clearly a law enforcement vehicle? You know, if a marked law enforcement vehicle pulls up behind somebody, even without its lights on, I think everybody would get a little bit of butterflies in their stomach wondering what they possibly did wrong. However, I think in this instance, it was so dark, it would have been hard for anybody objectively in that position to see whether it was actually marked or unmarked. They would pay more attention to the bright blue and red lights that were flashing. However, I think that's really specific to this instance and the particular time of day that this occurred, that it would be very difficult to see, you know, badges on the side of the door. I still think that show of authority by the lights being activated plays not a, you know, the only factor, but a significant factor in whether or not there was a definite show of authority that Dace would conclude that, you know, even for a few moments that he was being, you know, pulled over, so to speak, and approached by law enforcement.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Mr. Wake, do you wish to present a rebuttal argument?
Just a couple of quick points, Your Honor. So first, regarding the license request, the video reflects that there's about 12 seconds of interaction between Officer McIntosh and Mr. Houston, where Officer McIntosh approaches and speaks with Mr. Houston 12 seconds before he makes any reference to a driver's license. And Officer McIntosh testified that he immediately noticed that Mr. Houston's eyes were bloodshot and immediately smelled the odor of alcohol as soon as he began interacting with Mr. Houston. And so I think based on that evidence, counsel conceded before the magistrate court at the hearing on the motion to suspress that there was reasonable suspicion for a DUI investigation prior to any request to see a license. And as I understand it, he's conceded that again on appeals. I think that's correct. That's supported by the evidence below. With respect to whether there was any indication of any distress that would justify a community caretaking inquiry into Mr. Houston's well-being, I think there's exactly the sort of indication that was present in State v. Morales. There's Officer McIntosh observed a vehicle abruptly pull over to the side of the road in the middle of the night in an area where the driver couldn't have turned off onto another road or into a driveway. And that, just as in Morales, provided reason for the officer to be concerned that there was some issue with the vehicle or some problem with the driver, and provided reason for Officer McIntosh to look into that. Whether there was also an investigative purpose, I think it's absolutely fair to characterize the testimony below as Officer McIntosh stating both that he had concerns about the driver's well-being and he had suspicions or concerns about possible criminal activity, and that both of those things motivated his interaction with Mr. Houston. But I don't think any of this court's cases or the Idaho Supreme Court's cases stand for the proposition that the officer can't have any suspicion of criminal conduct in a detention that's justified by community caretaking. The cases just stand for the proposition that the justification associated with community caretaking has to be able to stand alone. That is, that the community caretaking concern has to be by itself sufficient to justify whatever detention occurred, even if there are also concerns about criminal conduct. And so the mere fact that Officer McIntosh testified that he also suspected perhaps some criminal conduct doesn't suggest in any way that this wasn't a community detention justified by the community caretaking function. Unless the court has further questions, the state requests that this court reverse the district court's order on intermediate appeal and reinstate the magistrate court's denial of Mr. Houston's motion to suppress.
Thank you, Mr. Wake. The court appreciates the briefing and arguments of counsel in this case. The matter is fully submitted and a written decision will issue in due course. The court will be in recess until the 9 o'clock oral argument on Thursday, January 13th.
Thank you.
Thank you.